Hello and welcome to the True Blue LA podcast. Eric Steven, Jacob Birch. During the last regular season series versus the Dodgers and Padres, Oral and Joe kept talking about how, like, this is the most, like, regardless of how it ends up, they're likely to meet in the NLDS. And I just remember thinking, one way or the other, that was jinxing it. Something silly was going to happen. Not even that silly, losing a three-game series would happen. And I was wrong. Here we are.
Yep. Well, it's what we sort of expected. But you're right. Like, it almost did not happen. Like, you know, like in.
I have a text from you that says, bring on the Cardinals.
I don't know if I worded it that way. I probably did, but we'll see. No.
Go ahead.
Anyway, yeah. So it's Dodgers Padres, just like we all expected. The one versus the four, but also the two best teams in the National League. If San Diego is fully healthy, I don't want to shortchange Atlanta, because they're probably the second best. If we'll talk about why, but yeah, it's going to be a fun series, and both teams are already in Arlington, and they're both staying at the same hotel. I believe all four division series sites, Texas or Arlington, excuse me, Houston, San Diego, and LA. In all four cities, both teams are staying at the same hotel, and like MLB like has the entire hotel. And if I read a couple of the reports right, that the staff at the hotel had all quarantined. So that's a good way to do it. Like, that was always the concern, right? Like, when you're dealing with this kind of thing, you're still dealing with like workers who aren't like bubbled, you know, but in this case, it sounds like they are, and hopefully compensated well for it, because that's a huge ask for many people to be like, but yeah, that's where it is. So it's bubbled up. It's sort of a bubble, you know, whatever, but that's where we're at. So the Dodgers are playing in Texas, and they're going to play there for a long time, as long as they keep winning. So we'll see how it goes.
We're going to be talking, previewing that series. We have a Dodgers Rewind. Do we have questions from Craig? We do.
Exciting. We do.
It's going to be a long episode, so we're going to take our break now and get right into it after this.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Bring on the Cardinals, I guess. That was the exact tweet or text message from you.
But do you remember what I was replying to? I don't have it in front of me, but it seemed like
you were replying to nothing.
Oh, okay. You know what it was? Because
it was you forgot that Cal Quantrill not on the Padres anymore, and he went to Stanford. So you were expecting.
No, so the Cardinals won game one against the Padres, and then game two they were up 4-0. I believe it was 4-0 because they were also up 6-2 a little later, and then like all hell broke loose in that series. Like, it was just like wild as hell. So I believe that's probably what it was. So we're all wrong at times, mostly me. But yeah, good times.
Where do you want to start?
So let's
talk about.
Yeah, let's get why the Dodgers are here or in this NLDS. Because they dispatched the Brewers in two games. The big takeaway from me was, holy crap, Clayton Kershaw. Like, wow. Like, that was a great start, right? Like, there's always been, like, I don't know. Well, look, ESPN, their broadcasts, I get their, I guess they have to, like, tailor it to, like, I guess they're trying to get more people to watch, necessarily not diehard baseball, but they were like they kind of hammered the, you know, Kershaw's not very good in the playoffs, like, thing, which is true. Like, they handled it, like, decently, but it seemed like that was the backdrop of, like, every inning.
And a friend of the show, John Weissman, really hammers this home. I'm getting so sick of it either being Clayton Kershaw is a playoff choker or this is the thing that will finally reverse the narrative. When the narrative, when the truth of the matter is, he's a very good pitcher who more often than not pitches very, very well, but sometimes he doesn't.
Right. Thing with me, like, I sort of see it like both ways, is that I think it's also, it's not very productive to, like, overly defend him in a way, because his, you know, even if you take out, like, some of his very worst starts, his postseason numbers are still far below, like, his actual regular season numbers. So it's not like there's no reason he gets criticized, but also, like, a start in the wild card game doesn't reverse everything.
Yep.
And none of this, like, even if he pitches just average the rest of the way and the Dodgers win, that'll, like, sort of do it, right? That's what erases it, and, like, nothing else. So, like, it's just going to be there. It's always going to be there until they win a championship. So, like, I think I sort of have come to peace with that, but it was just interesting the way, like, ESPN was, like, framing it. It seemed like they brought it up a lot, but, like, I sort of get it. They actually weren't, like, it wasn't overly done in a way. They brought it up often, but they weren't, like, badgering with it. I don't think they were sort of explaining it. Like, there were three people, it was Carl Ravitch, Tim Kirkjian and Eduardo Perez. They did a good job, at least on that part of it. Like, they had some other points in the series where you're just wondering, like, what are they watching? Like, the Eduardo Perez at one point said, man, Walker Buehler showing emotion on the mound, you rarely see that from him. It's like, you've never seen him pitch, have you? Like, that was very weird. There's always a few moments like that where that's sort of the curse of a national broadcast, where it's impossible to, like, keep track of every team, but, like, you also shouldn't speak with authority when that's not there. Like, so, because you make that, that's, like, a bad mistake. But yeah, anyway, back to Kershaw. He was wonderful. 8 scoreless innings against the Brewers, 13 strikeouts. Only two Dodgers have had more in a postseason start, Sandy Koufax and Carl Erskine, as Carl Ravitch talked to him, but it's Carl Erskine. But the most important thing to me, like, we've talked a lot about Kershaw's fastball velocity this year, how it's gone up. It was like a mile and a half faster than last year, which is a huge jump at age 32. But his slider is, like, much sharper now, and, like, there's different, like, layers to it. Some breaks a little more than others, but, like, it's just super sharp now. He got 20 swinging strikes with the slider. Like, I think, to put this in perspective, I believe he hasn't had a start with 20 total swinging strikes since, like, 2017. He got it all just with the slider on Thursday, I guess. And then 24 swinging strikes total. That's either his best since, like, 2016 or 17. So it was just awesome. And then you look at it, like, he had a bad start, like, his last outing of the year. And he talked about, like, he's less stubborn now. He changed up his routine a little bit in between that. So, like, he's the most, like, regimented, like, stick to a routine, like, player on the team and possibly in baseball, like, the last decade or so. But, like, the fact that he's, like, open to, like, you know, doing other things, like, that's a good thing, I think. And, like, it showed. But I just was looking at this. So he's made 11 starts this year, counting the regular season. His ERA is 190, 75 strikeouts and 8 walks. So, like, it's awesome. Like, it's been really, really good. And like, there's like a, you know, look, it is only 11 starts, but man, you think about like how much could he really improve? And like, but he's like pitching very, very well. And like, that's something that, I don't know if I would have expected, at least at this level again, but like, that's been a very, very pleasant surprise this year.
I sort of was expecting this at some point. To be honest, I was kind of expecting it a little bit more last year with how hard he's working, how often he hasn't done this in a bit, but I remembered a few seasons ago was really reverential to Greg Maddux, sort of the master of getting by without when your stuff either is lower or different. So I had hopes, and this is just really, really cool to see. Wouldn't it be great to see this for two or three more seasons at least at this elevated, not quite Superman level, but still one of the best pitchers in baseball level? That would be so great.
Yeah, and like the fun thing about this year, I think, or this team, I think, is that the team is sort of built that, yes, they have stars, a lot of stars actually, but like they're not so reliant on them that if the stars like fail, it's a kill shot, you know. Like Cody Bellinger was just barely like above average this year, a little better than that probably. Max Muncy didn't do much at all. He was really, really good the last 2 years, but it didn't hurt like the offense. And like I think the same, like if Kershaw's just pretty good, like that might be enough, and he's been way better than that, so like that's a good sign.
All right, so what else happened in this series? What were your big takeaways against the Brewers series?
So, like, it was only two games, so it's hard to, like, but Mookie Betts was, like, clearly impactful. He doubled in his first two at-bats in game one. He had a two-run double to break open game two. Corey Seager in game one, the Dodgers early on in that game, you knew Milwaukee was, like, kind of screwed, because they were going bullpen game in game one, and if it went to game three, they were going to have to do bullpen game again. And like one of their best relievers, and like a guy who had like started four times, I believe, and he pitched three innings, three times, four innings, once he allowed like I think two total runs, and in those starts, and like he came out and he could not throw a strike, and he walked like five guys in less than two innings, and he was done. And like so, the Dodgers scored early in that game, and they like that, you know, helped them a lot. Corey Seager walked one of those times, and then he also homered late to add some insurance. That was his 16th home run, counting the regular season. So right now the team total is Mookie Betts 16, Corey Seager 16, AJ Pollock 16. So the race continues. But also Austin Barnes, personal catcher, he drove home the first run of game two. He had two hits on the night. So like that's also a positive sign, like they're just getting production. So it was really, really good. Also, like just the Dodgers pitching in general, not just Kershaw. Walker Buehler started game one. They have to like the blister didn't like break, but they're like managing it very, very carefully right now. So he only pitched four innings. He gave up two runs. It was a double and then a two out home run to Orlando Arcia, who like somehow keeps like killing the Dodgers in the playoffs. It's weird, but he only threw 73 pitches, but they're like at a management level with him now. Also, this series was only three games, so they had the luxury of like using one of the three other starters, you know, in a bulk role. And they basically just followed up Buehler with three scoreless innings from Julio Urias, and it was really good. Buehler struck out eight in his four innings. He was awesome, but like I think they're just being very careful. It's going to be interesting to see how they he's starting game one against the Padres. They're going to keep managing it, but then you really can't use one of the starters in a long roll. You could theoretically use the game like four or five starter in like a one inning roll, I guess maybe two if you stretch, but we'll see how they sort of manage that. But like he struck out eight, Urias struck out five. They both like they each struck out two in every inning in the first six innings, and then Urias only struck out one in the seventh, so obviously they had to take him out at that point because he just wasn't up to snuff. But no, the Dodgers batter struck out 28 of 68. Dodgers pitchers struck out 28 of 68 Brewers batters. That's 41%. The Milwaukee had the worst strikeout rate in the league during the regular season. It was 26.5%. The Padres had the fourth best K rate, 21.5%. The Dodgers were even better than that. So it's going to be a bit more of a challenge for the pitchers in this round, but like that, those are sort of the takeaways from the wild card series.
So that's the wild card series. Best record in baseball, you got to play wild card series. That's how it works. Mm-hmm. So now it's the NLDS. It still feels super weird to me. So really, the start of the playoffs, I've seen a lot of. Players and managers put it, especially players and managers of some of the better franchises that have been there for a while.
Yeah.
So it's a 5-game series. I'm just still getting used to the, like, it feels like I've been in playoff mode now for a week. We've done a playoff preview and now a recap episode, but now it feels like we're starting at the beginning.
Also, because they had two planned days off if the series had gone the distance. So, like, the Dodgers will have had 4 days off in between game two against the Brewers and game one against the Padres. It's weird. There's, like, a lot of downtime. And, like, so that allows you to sort of build it up a little bit. Now, once we get into this, it's normal-ish in terms of between series, though there's no off days within series. So, like, once the NLDS ends, if it goes to full five, there's only one day off between that and the NLCS. So, like, it gets a little bit more normal that way, but it's still it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. But for the NLDS, so all year, like, Joe Davis was calling home games for the Dodgers at home. And for his Fox games, he was calling from a studio. He is in Arlington. He's going to call the Dodgers-Padres series. Four of the games are on FS1, and it's going to be Joe Davis and John Smoltz. So all the people are going to be half excited about that. No, I don't know. And then game three is an MLB Network game. MLB Network usually gets like two or three division series games. They have one in this series, one in the Braves-Marlins series, but in that game three, it's Matt Beskirgin and John Smoltz, so no Joe Davis now, but he's going to be there. So is Smoltz, so it's a little bit different than we've been seeing for national stuff. So the Padres, you know, much better offense than the Brewers, third in the majors in run scoring behind the Dodgers and Braves, fourth in home runs. The Dodgers were first in both. And it was their offense that kind of rescued them. So they were without Denelson Lamet and Mike Clevinger. Elbow for Clevinger, bicep soreness, I think, for Lamet. They're still up in the air for the NLDS. We'll see. But, like, they did not pitch at all. They were off the roster in the wild card series. And the Padres lost the first game. Like I said, they were down 6-2 in the sixth inning of game two. So they were staring elimination in the face. And then Fernando Tatis and Will Myers each hit two home runs that game. It was an 11-9 game. And then in game three, because they didn't really have any other starters. And plus, the starters they used, Chris Paddock and Zach Davies, only lasted, I think, 4 2/3 innings, or maybe it was 4 1/3 in the two games. So, like, their bullpen, they used 9 relievers in game three, and they shut out the Cardinals. So, like, it was really good, but the rest will help them. They had 3 days. They're going to have 3 days off between their game and game one against the Dodgers. So I think their pitchers are going to be rested, but that's sort of what they're going to have to do if they don't have both of Lamet and Clevinger. If they do have those, it's a much, like, closer matchup, I think, but we'll see how it goes. It was 24 relief appearances to cover 22 1/3 innings in 3 days. So now it's 5 days. It's going to be different. Obviously the Dodgers will have Gonsolin, May, and Urias for 3, 4, 5. They don't know they haven't said the order yet. Now, Robert said any of those three will probably be available in game one or two as a possible relief if needed. We'll see how that plays out. Kershaw sort of made it the other day that they didn't have to use anyone else because he went eight. So now the Padres, where the Padres' advantage might come in is in the back end of the bullpen because things are weird there right now. So, and it's weird in a way because like Kenley Jansen had on a base level, right? Obviously there's more to it. He came in, he walked a guy with a 2-run lead and didn't allow a run and recorded the save. And striking, oh my God,
out a former MVP. That sounds great.
Right. And it was like, oh, okay, cool. But then like you saw it, but in the backdrop of that, like, the Dodgers had Brusdar Gridrow warming up in that game because Kenley Jansen's first cutter, I don't remember if it was his actual first pitch or not, but it was 86. And they're like, what the hell is that? Right. And so, you know, that's what's going on. And like, he was just kind of all over the place a little bit. He only threw 8 cutters out of 16 pitches, which, you know, that's like a thing for a normal pitcher to do. But Kenley like throws his, I think he's around 2/3 this year, maybe a little less, but in his career, it's like, you know, 70 to 80% or more, that he throws the cutter. So like, so after game one, like it was weird how this sort of played out. Like, after game one, Roberts was like, yeah, his pitches just didn't have any teeth to him, you know, but obviously he's still our closer, blah, blah, blah. And then before game two, he's like, look, I saw the video. The pitches looked a lot better than I thought. He had more movement to it because, you know, we're speaking to Roberts like after the game. He's viewing a lot of this stuff from the side, from the dugout. He hasn't had a chance to fully review stuff. So you're going to get like more raw reaction, I think, in that case. But he was sort of sticking up for Jansen before game two. Same thing, still our closer, blah, blah, blah. And then with Jansen available in game two in a 3-0 lead in the ninth, they went with Brusdar Gridrow. And now Gridrow, same thing, like he allowed, I believe, a hit and got out of it. But he actually hung a few sliders that was kind of lucky that weren't like tattooed. But he was fine. And, you know, I think that's just how it's going to be sometimes. So now I'll say this, after game two, Roberts did the thing where he's like, look, Jansen's our closer, but he was also sort of covering for him in a way. And then Roberts quote on Sunday, we're recording this Sunday night. Roberts spoke to the media a few hours ago. He said he spun it in a way that was one of the more like creative spins I've ever heard, where he basically said, Kenley's our closer, but it's also an open position right now.
So, like I said the other day, he's our closer, but there's still opportunities. And I talked to Kenley yesterday just to kind of be on the same page that there's still going to be times that I might need him in a different inning. And he's on board with whatever to help us win baseball games. And it's a title, but I think that in practice, there are certain innings and certain parts of the lineup that I think he's the best option. So we'll kind of proceed that way.
Assuming for no reason, just because it increases our sample size, it's a 5. The Dodgers get 3 wins in this series, and they are all save opportunities. How many do you think Kenley's going to get?
Of opportunities, like 1.
Okay, interesting. Man, this will be fun.
But like, yeah, it's so weird. Like, So we've reached this sort of like utopia that like should be good, like it, but it's also like it, you have to sort of delicately handle it, I think, if you're Roberts, because everyone on the team is like, look, we're fine with whatever role, but Kenley's our closer, you know, like and you sort of have to like play it that way. But like, I the way Roberts is talking about it, that Kenley's open to whatever, so and he's probably gonna be fine, like, just not, you know, it's not like I'm sure his ego is hurt by if he's not closing all the games, but like also tangibly, they were working on his mechanics. He's had issues like this before. I believe before game two, he was working on it. Also, I believe the last 2 days in Arlington, I think one of the days MLB Network's like ballpark cam, like, showed Jansen in the bullpen, like working on stuff. And it's usually like sort of tightening up his front side, making sure like everything is working in order. Because you, even if Jansen's not the closer, he still has to pitch better like when he comes in and can't be coming in throwing in like 86 to 88. So like that's a thing. Like he just has to pitch better when he pitches, and whether it's the seventh, eighth, or ninth or whatever. So yeah, they do have a lot of options, like you know, decent, but they're, it's all of them. We've talked about this so much, like how they all have flaws in some way, but like so does every bullpen. So it's just a matter of like you just hope the other, you know, the offense plus the starting pitching will like help build enough cushions to like withstand any sort of bumps they might have in sort of navigating this. But that'll be definitely like the thing to sort of watch, obviously, in this round.
All right. Anything else? Or are you going to abuse me with trivia questions?
I am going to abuse you. So back to Clayton Kershaw for a second. So in his game two win, he tied for the second best Dodgers postseason game score with 88 against the Brewers. There's only one Dodgers pitcher ahead of him. Can you name him?
I will try my very best after this.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The highest game score in a playoff game for the Dodgers. This is LA and Brooklyn.
Yes. And now it's a thing where, you know, game score is not the end all be all. It's a fun little stat from Bill James and stuff, but if you have a really high game score, it was an awesome start. Right. But I can give you a hint by telling you Kershaw's tied with two different games. I can tell you what those games are if you want.
Sure.
Okay, so Kershaw's 88, eight innings, 13 strikeouts, no runs, is tied with Sandy Koufax's final two starts of the 1965 World Series. Both were shutouts. Both had 10 strikeouts. Game 5 was 4 hits and a walk. Game 7 on 2 days rest, LOL, was 3 hits and 3 walks. So both of those had 88 game scores. So Kershaw matched it even without going 9. That's how good his start was. And the other, I'm looking at this, everyone that's up, there's 10 above 80, 10 game scores above 80 in Dodgers postseason history. The only two that didn't go 9 were Kershaw. The other one for Kershaw was an 81 2 years ago in game 2 of the NLDS against the Braves. He also went 8. He only struck out 3 in that one, so that's why the number isn't as high. But yeah, so there's one person ahead of him, and I'll give you this hint. Also, it's an 89.
So one above it.
Yes.
All right. My first guess was Hyunjin Ryu. No, sorry. That's later down on my guess list, and you ruled it out. Don Drysdale. Easy how you can mix those two up. This is what I get for writing my guesses down ahead of time.
I'm going to tell you, Hyunjin Ryu, who had a 7 scoreless innings the day before that, 2018 LDS, he had a 77. Mm-hmm. That's tied for 29th. But yeah, Don Drysdale was the answer. Now, for a bonus, can you tell me what World Series this was in?
Man, No.
Okay, so it was game three against the Yankees in 1963.
Okay. The would Dodgers have been my second guess, but I would have been straight guessing.
That's probably their – well, it's clearly their, like, most impressive, like, World Series performance. They swept the mighty Yankees in four games, and that was the closest game of all. That was at Dodger Stadium. Koufax had two wins in that. He won game one and game four, but that was the closest game. He struck out nine, gave up three hits and a walk. So 89, the best game score in Dodgers postseason history.
Sounds great. I'm glad that I not read my because I was basically going most recent to older.
Yeah.
And then you rolled it out with the it was a complete game thing. So.
Wait, did I say it? Oh, I did that. Yeah,
you did do that. Yeah. I always listen for the context clues. I got to take what I can get. Dodgers rewind.
Yep. So this last like week or so, I don't remember the exact date of this first one, but it's been a rough one for like former Dodgers dying. Basically, we had Lou Johnson, Sweet Lou Johnson, died on Thursday. He was 86. He had a home run to win game seven in that Koufax shutout in 1965. Ron Peronoski, who was a relief ace for the Dodgers in the 60s and then also a pitching coach for 14 years, which is still tied for the longest tenured pitching coach in Dodgers history. One of their more, you know, one of their more influential, like just people in the organization ever. He died on Friday. This is like inconsequential, but I sort of am tickled a little bit that he, I believe the note from the team said he died at his Vero Beach home. And I was like, oh, that's sweet. Like, you know, played all those years, like going to spring training in Vero Beach, like Rick Monday, I believe still lives in Vero Beach in the off season. And like,
I believe he just lives in an RV.
Yeah. Okay.
Sorry.
No, but that was this the during joke, the season. Joke, oh yeah. Yeah. Joke. Yeah. In a van. So yeah, like I just thought that was a nice little touch. But the other one, that the first person who passed away in over the last week, and I sort of it didn't slip under the radar. I just haven't had a chance much to talk about it, so that's why I made him the Dodgers rewind. Jay Johnstone passed away about a week ago. I know I have to ask you, like, Johnstone, he played like a little when I was watching, but like very little, but he was before your time. Is there anything you particularly like when I say Jay Johnstone, is there anything that stood out to you that you remembered at all?
No.
Okay. So like in some ways, like obviously, you know, played baseball a long time. That's an accomplishment. To me, I always knew him as like a prankster. Like so I started watching in 84, and then 85 was like my first full year. He came back to the Dodgers that year, barely played. But so I didn't, he wasn't like on my radar as like a player because he was like at the end of his career. But I knew of him as a jokester, like a just world-class baseball prankster. And then a few years later, he was in Naked Gun. He was the leadoff hitter for the Mariners in the baseball game, which is like just one of my favorite movie sequences of all time. That it just entire baseball game is so great. He takes the three strikes, and then as Frank Drebin like slowly like enjoys calling strikes more and more, it's just one of the greater things ever. But so I'm gonna read this. This is from the LA Times the other day. Jerry Royce sort of recounted one of these pranks that he pulled on Tommy Lasorda. And this is just quoting from Jerry Royce. In the spring of 1981, Jay, who had just seen the movie Private Benjamin, wanted to play a prank on Tom Lasorda. Jay, who stayed on the base at Dodgertown, managed to secure a key to the manager's room on campus that was shared by Tom and his wife, Jo. One morning, Jay approached me with a story that stopped me in my tracks. "You're not going to believe what I just did to our manager's room. I put dye in the shower head," parenthetical notation, inspired no doubt by the movie, "removed the carbon mouthpiece of the phone so he can't call out, put a nail in his window so that it only opened a few inches, and tonight I plan to tie a rope from his doorknob to the palm tree in the front of his room so he can't open it." He gleefully chuckled. Surprised, all I could do was laugh, but a thought occurred to me. Jay, I'm impressed with the plan. One thing, though, I mentioned. What's that? He replied. Tom takes his after-workout showers in the bathroom of his office. His wife, Jo, I assume, she showers in the room. Now, that might be a problem. Jay paused. I didn't think of that, he said, as he ran from the field. Jay somehow managed to re-enter the room and remove the dye from the shower head, undetected a second time. His plan worked to perfection. Around 7 a.m., maintenance workers heard Lasorda's screams and were able to liberate him from his makeshift prison. To this day, I'm not aware if Tommy Lasorda knows the identity of the perpetrator. Now, this was Jerry Royce like this last week. I'm certain Lasorda knew who it was because I think this story's been brought up so many times that, like, I think he clearly knew. But that's, like, that's a classic baseball prank, right? Like, mm-hmm. there's elements of, like, all right, this might be sociopathic behavior, but, like, on some level, as an old-time baseball story, pretty fun. But also, he was important, like, baseball-wise. In 1981, the Dodgers, they lost the first two games against the Yankees. They ended up winning the last four. But, like, they did so in pretty, like, dramatic fashion. Game four, they were down 6-3 in the sixth. He had a two-run pinch-hit homer. They won that game 8-7. The next day, he wasn't a part of the comeback, but, like, that was a Royce versus Ron Guidry game. And it was Steve Yeager and Pedro Guerrero hit back-to-back home runs to win it. And that, like, put him on the path to sort of win the championship. But with the Phillies in 1976, Jay Johnstone was 7-for-9 with a double and a triple in the NLCS. The Phillies got swept, but he was pretty awesome. In his career, he was 10-for-21 in the postseason. There was another moment in a 1981 game. Another Jerry Royce, also a great prankster. And ultimately, like, a better player for his, like, two decades or whatever. But Johnstone and Royce dragged the infield with the ground screw. They dressed up and everything. It was a game at Dodger Stadium, Dodgers Pirates. And then Lasorda was, like, so mad. He's like, Johnstone, get in there and pinch hit. And, like, Johnstone was, like, still getting back into his uniform. He's like, fine. He goes up and hits a homer as a pinch hitter. So that was Jay Johnstone, just a truly baseball character. I guess he has, I believe, two books that are really good. I think Jay Jaffe wrote a little bit about it. I have not read those, but I plan to at some point because I'm sure he had, like, a ton of baseball stories to tell. Now, related to Jay Johnstone, I have another trivia question for you.
Good.
So in game three of the 1976 NLCS, Jay Johnstone singled, doubled, and tripled. So he was a home run shy of the cycle. He's one of 29 players in MLB history with a single, double, and triple in a postseason game. One of those, only one, Brock Holt, 2 years ago in the ALDS for the Red Sox. He had the only cycle in postseason history. Now, there are three Dodgers with a double or a single, double, and triple in a playoff game. Can you name any of the three?
It's really interesting to me that there's only been one postseason cycle. You'd think you would, you know, it's not super duper rare. I wonder if it's like, there are less, I'm just doing this for the cycle triples.
Oh, right. Yeah. I got I guess that's true. You really got to get the triple early.
Yeah. Or, you know, there have been a few where it's like, well, we're playing for nothing else. I'm going to leg this out and hope the throw's bad. Okay. I'm done stalling. Jackie Robinson.
No. I will give you a hint. You saw one of these, no doubt. And
that doesn't help.
The first one was 1985. So,
ooh, wow, really? Yeah. That's really interesting to me. I have to cross some names off my list.
And when I will tell these, you won't get this because when I saw it, I was like, huh, like really?
Oh no.
Yeah,
I'm literally crossing off almost every name on my list. I just associate triples. I always go older. It seems like a rarer feat these days. That's I mean, I guess the inverse of that is there's more playoff games nowadays.
I'll give you a further hint. The most recent one was the 2013 NLDS.
Okay. You were making me worried that, like, I was going to have to really think of, like, last season this happened. I'm just completely joking.
Yeah.
Okay. So literally the only name post 1985 I have on my list was Rafael Furcal.
Oh, that would have been a good one. But yeah, wasn't around in 2013 with the Dodgers.
Right. I meant earlier.
So Okay, go ahead. You have another one?
No. Go for it.
So the first one that I saw on here, Mariano Duncan. Okay. Game six of the NLCS against the Cardinals, which the Dodgers led 5-4 in the ninth, and I don't remember how it ended. And then Mike Marshall in game five of the NLCS, which was a Monday morning game, a 9 a.m. Pacific start, because it was in New York. And so I was at school. That's why I missed it. Dodgers won that game. But the one that was most recent that you would have seen, Hanley Ramirez.
Okay.
Who had just a killer series against the Braves and then went into the NLCS, and everybody's hero, Joe Kelly, broke his ribs with a fastball and sort of decimated the Dodgers.
Was that our first True Blue LA podcast playoff year?
Yes.
It might have been.
Yeah, because, well, they didn't make it in 12 or 11. And I think we started this like either 2012 or early 2013. No,
and I remember that because I didn't get to watch a lot of that playoffs generally because I was like traveling nonstop for work. I remember being, I think, in Philadelphia, like doing a podcast on my phone with you and like nowhere near a TV that I could watch it just because of work stuff, but still dedicated to the craft.
I'll just assume that the triple happened when you were en route.
Yeah,
and then that's why. That's why I
would have easily gotten this without it.
Well, to be honest, I had no clue. And when I saw, I was like, okay, I guess that happened. Like, sure. Like, why not?
All right. It's time for.
The following advertisement is paid for by the QFC Super PAC.
Every week, Jacob and Eric get questions from Craig, but we have questions of our own. Why do they need Craig to ask questions at all? Why can't they come up with their own questions? Are they even really Dodger fans? Is there anything true about True Blue LA?
I'm Craig, and I approve this message.
I'm really proud that we're running through this quick. I was for sure that recapping one quote-unquote series, previewing another, and we'd be at the two-hour mark and just getting the questions from Craig. But here
I also thought that, and then... But also, I know any glee you think I might have gotten from your trivia, you're going to return it because I saw the first question and I'm going to tank this so bad.
Okay. I'm going to have to check various emails because I don't think I got the answers in the appropriate fashion. So I will work on that while you stall for your own sake. Eric, can you name the top three Dodgers in these categories in divisional series play? Runs, hits, and home runs. Hint, one current Dodger is in all three of these top threes.
Okay, so the one thing I know for certain is that just all postseason-wide, Justin Turner is like at the top of most categories. You know, he doesn't quite have home runs, but he's like the all-time Dodger postseason leader in hits, RBIs, doubles.
Sort of the Eric Karras effect.
Yeah, and so... But also, he's been really good. And,
I know.
So Justin Turner is my answer for the all the top threes. Now, it really has to be somewhat. I think just because look, they've only in the division series itself, they had that long stretch where they barely made the playoffs after '88, and so it was '95, '96, '04. 06 and then 08-09 before this current run. So like it's almost certainly like mostly modern guys or like current-ish guys. So I have to say I think Yasiel Puig would be on here.
Okay. I need to look under which one or ones.
Okay. So I think he's under hits and runs.
Okay.
You're
right.
Okay. So, well, and then also because,
answers, by the way,
also because I think unless Turner passed him this last week, Puig is also the all time Dodger leader in games played, postseason games played, which
Turner
is
did pass him. Yeah.
Oh, and that, which is just wild, right? Like, I remember when he almost signed with the Braves, I put up a post and I think I tweeted it out as Dodgers all time postseason leader in postseason games played signs elsewhere. Everyone's like, what? Like, but anyway, now I just because it
I also it like you know real quick, you were right about Justin Turner.
Oh, nice. Okay,
not surprising, but.
So I think, I want to say Matt Kemp for home runs.
Nope.
What about? See, Hanley was only 13 and 14, and like he was awesome. But was it enough? Like,
I would be very surprised if you're going to get the other runs scored player. I'll let you know that right now.
All right,
but maybe would surprise me. Yeah.
So, what about Ethier on hits?
Nope.
Okay.
I'm going to give you one name left because you have. All right, I'm going to give you one more guess, two more guesses on each, but you got to go quick. Runs sure. scored, you have Justin Turner, who will let you know leads with 13 runs scored. And yeah. you have Yasiel Puig, who has 11. So you're missing the third place, who has 9.
Again,
I'm going to be surprised if you get it.
Huh. Okay. This is bad. Chris Taylor.
Nope.
All right, yeah, I don't know.
Carl Crawford.
No, nice. Wait, is he? Would he also be on home runs because he went off that in 2013? Maybe not. I don't know.
He is. So for fourth place, there's a bunch of people tied, and he's one of yeah. the people in fourth place.
Yeah. Well, right. You can give me the other ones because I'm not going to get them.
Well, there is one name that is on both the hits and home runs number.
Okay.
If that helps or not.
Oh, let me think.
He would be a very notable player in this the Padres Dodgers series about to start.
Is it Grandal? No way. I was going to say
another very famous former Padre, former
Dodger. Oh, Adrian Gonzalez.
There you go.
Yeah.
So that
forget how long he was on. Like, yeah.
Exactly. I'm gonna see if I can get you to get this one because I like this one because in home runs you got Justin Turner and Adrian Gonzalez. Who are tied for second. You were missing the leader in home runs with the Dodgers in today's
play. Okay.
and I will say it is a current Dodger.
A current Dodger. Wow. Okay, so...
Who is the only good hitter for the Dodgers last year?
I was going to say Max Muncy.
There you go.
Wow. What is it, four?
Five. Max and then four for...
That's Justin impressive because it's only two for him.
Yeah, like, no, it's yeah. impressive.
Wow. All right, nice. I like that question.
No, it was good. Playoff wager con... Oh, no. Wait, I'm ahead. I'm playing with house money here. Yeah. Which series will produce more total home runs? Astros at A's at Dodger Stadium... Or Padres and Dodgers at Globe Life Field.
So there's a couple things here. Now, you know, one, I think Dodgers and Padres are better home run hitters. Mm-hmm. But also, what if the series goes three or four mm-hmm. and the other one goes five? I think Dodgers Padres will have more than Astros A's.
And I think a decent chance of going longer, as much as I would rather not have that happen.
Yeah.
A lot of it will depend on their starting pitching health, obviously.
Yeah.
Both, not only do they make the roster, but are they actually healthy? Or are they doing that sort of gambit thing?
So are you also going Dodgers Padres?
I am.
Okay.
I think the A's sweep the Astros. That's probably a... some desire bias there, but I don't care.
There's America's team, the A's. that was another thing. So poor Twins, man, they've lost 18 straight playoff games. They got swept by the Astros, and then Carlos Correa was like, yeah, well, we won, and now what are you going to say? It's like, yeah, still the same that you cheated. Like, that's like, it was just, they're they're astonishing. Anyway, so we both picked that, so we're both going to be right, obviously.
Well, how about this? What if we expanded it to all four series? Are you still going Padres Dodgers?
No.
Because another thing to remember, another thing to keep in mind in here is are any of the other teams pitching that bad? That's well, just going to give up a bunch of taters.
The Marlins, like
the Braves hit a lot of home runs.
And that, so. Like, I think I'm going to do an order and then we'll see if we'll do it that way. So my order is Yankees, Rays, Dodgers, Padres, Braves, Marlins, and then, A's, Astros.
I'm going to go Braves, Marlins.
Nice.
Dodgers, Padres, Yankees, Rays, Astros, A's.
So our basic thing is, our bet is really here. I think that the Rays and the Yankees will have more than the Braves and Marlins.
You
think
so? There we go. That's nice. The bet.
Nice. I like it.
They'll tie.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think the lack of opposing teams' fans will make any difference in how pitchers, particularly younger ones, perform in this postseason?
I mean, I guess sort of, but like, I don't know if it's like.
And hey, who says they won't be there?
Right. Oh, right. For this series, there's no fans. But for the NLCS,
what if Clayton Kershaw just buys every single of the 18,000 tickets for all the games?
Yeah.
And brings all his family.
It's gonna be weird. Like how? So I believe the number. What is it? It's 11,500.
Okay.
Which is like 28% of capacity, and they're gonna do it where it's like I think they're. The seats are in like pods of four, basically almost in socially distanced or whatever. So we'll see how it goes. But yeah, I don't know. I think there's still pressure in these games. Like, cause we, even some of the rallies, like in the Padres Cardinals series, like pitchers are still melting down even with no fans. So, and also White Sox A's had some craziness a couple days. So it affects it, but I don't think, there's still going to be meltdowns, basically.
Fourth question. I noticed today that Albert Pujols' career batting average is listed at .299. After his last season in St. Louis, Pujols was hitting .328 with an OPS over 1 in over 6,000 at-bats. His stat line for the Angels in his nine seasons.
Yeah.
Wow, I feel old. Is .257, .312, .448 in over 4,500 at-bats. Plus only one playoff appearance as an Angel. How do you think the second half of his career impacts how Pujols' career is viewed, if at all? I think one interesting thing there is that because they haven't been making the playoffs and they play on sort of, don't yell at me, Angels fan, but sort of a non-marquee West Coast team is kind of just forgotten as opposed to a besmirchment, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so and like I think...
Like, I was just shocked that he's played nine in Anaheim.
It is kind of amazing that it's run out that long. Like, next year is the last year in his contract.
Yeah, like, I knew all that, but it just didn't feel like nine. To me, Albert Pujols is the great Cardinals hitter, and it wasn't that long ago. But here we are.
So just to give you an idea, like, his last 5 years total, he's totaled, baseball reference-wise, 0.7 WAR. So like he's been basically replacement level like for 5 years now. A couple years he was over, but one year was terrible. He was played all the time and he was bad, and he was under. But like that said, generally like he's like clearly so very clearly inner circle type Hall of Famer, clearly first ballot.
Yep,
and like look. He just wasn't that good the last couple of years, but still like I think people are going to be more amazed by
his peak and you know.
Yeah, but also like look at the totals, like right, he's fifth in home runs, he's third in RBIs, like he's like in the top 10 of like all these categories. I think he's fifth in doubles, and like so like you know, obviously at a certain point it's compiling, but like just to be able to amass that grade of total, even obviously played in a home run era and all this, but still incredible, like just total numbers. But yeah, he's not as good as he once was, but like nobody really could have been. And that's why it's funny, like, because you look now, Mike Trout had, he's had eight great years this year. You know, sort of, he was on his way to a ninth. I think his defensive numbers were a little down, so it wasn't as ostentatious as it usually is. Maybe it would have played out that way over a full season. Who knows? But, like, it's funny. You look back and it's like, yeah, Pujols was almost there, like, in his first 8 years, right? Like, he was awesome. Like, just so, so good. And so, like, he's – I don't think it's going to tarnish him long term. I think the more removed you get from it, the more you're like, wow, what a great hitter, rather than, wow, he was bad at the, like, and right now he's not very good, but like, I think still he's going to be remembered for his greatness and not what he's doing now.
Yeah, completely agree. Eric, do you remember the first time you had a California or San Diego burrito with fries and carne asada? And for both of you, how do you feel about fries being an ingredient in sandwiches or burritos?
So I don't remember it because I've never had any French fries in a burrito. I don't like it. the idea of it sickens me. Now I've had carne asada fries before, like at a few Mexican restaurants, but like maybe two times total in my life. Because if I'm in the mood for something like that, it's going to be at like a Mexican restaurant, like a little, most likely a Mexican like drive-through slash takeout place that I'm grabbing from, and they're gonna also have on their menu carne asada nachos, and I would much rather have that that'd be the delivery than the fries, because just the sogginess of it, the chips are much better for that, and just generally it's not what I'm looking for in a burrito. I guess I also am not big on like potatoes in burritos, just generally. Like, I know, like, maybe a breakfast burrito is different. You can throw a little bit of potato in there, but that's just not my jam. I'd rather just have more carne asada than have any French fries in there at all.
Generally, I haven't had one. So I'm going to speak more towards fries and sandwiches. Not a giant fan, just because that, I think you should be getting the saltiness from something else, and that sort of texture to me is what the bread already brings. Alternatively, I love potato chips and sandwiches.
Chips, I could see that. I haven't really done that a ton.
Oh, some Ruffles on a Philippe's French dip. Oh, it's delicious.
Nice. Now, if I were ever to go to Pittsburgh, I would certainly get a Primanti Brothers or whatever that has fries in there, and would eat that up happily, and just to try it and say I did, and then go, why do people do this? No, I don't know. I'm just not a fan. I like the fries for what they are, aside, and I don't like just sort of combining it all, I guess. So I just never have been into that.
Well, I want a French dip. Unfortunately, I live nowhere near downtown LA.
I live relatively close to the hat. I could drive by one and take a picture of it for you if you want. And then on my way home, I'll stop and get carne asada nachos and go, ha, didn't even get fries. Well, this will be out before game one. Enjoy the NLDS. We'll be back after the series to either talk about the end of the season or the NLDS review / NLCS preview. So, thanks for listening, everybody. We will talk to you next week.